Greetings once again. My name is Doug McBurney. And you may have heard the news. But stand by now for the worldview. It is the weekly worldview. It's the show that you've been waiting for. The show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and it's actually been 2 weeks, and I must apologize for our absence last Sunday, our unannounced absence, but I will try to explain myself. First of all, it was 6 degrees in Denver. That's where the story starts. So I and the entire clan abandoned the McBurney compound and fled south to Phoenix, where I worked for a little while, and, well, a great time was had by all. And last Sunday, well, I worked all day, like a dog, like a rented mule I worked. And then that evening, took the family out to dinner with Walt and Peggy Brown of In the Beginning fame, the Hydroplate Theory, all of that. It was fantastic. Went to Sweet Tomatoes. I never enjoyed a salad so much. I've never enjoyed a salad until then. What's that? Oh, and they paid. They bought dinner for the whole McBurney clan, which is no small feat, by the way. So it was outstanding. So anyway, Sunday evening is upon us. Dinner is over. We head back to the hotel and jump in the pool. And I forgot it was Sunday. It didn't feel like a Sunday. I had worked all day. I'm in Phoenix. It's 75 degrees. I'm in the pool at 7:30 in the evening. And, well, I woke up the next morning and realized it was Monday and that I hadn't done a show on Sunday and that I hadn't even told you people that I wasn't going to be around. But I hope you understand, and I hope you can forgive me. Yeah, I had a great time with Walt Brown. I brought up a news article to him, and I said, Walt, do you think this has anything to do with... And he looked at it. He said, no, that doesn't have anything to do with anything. Nice try. I said, okay, I'll keep working on that. Walt Brown, PhD from MIT. Anyway, it was outstanding. Yes, Walt's wife, Peggy, very, very impressive person. Chained herself to an abortion clinic back in the 80s to try to save innocent people. Very, very impressive couple, and we're so thankful to have had that opportunity. But now we're back, and I know you're on the edge of your seat to know what does McBurney think about Barack Obama, the rogue president, the executive amnesty, and all that that's going on. And we'll get to some of that a little later in the show. But I want to preface the program with an announcement. Now, this shouldn't take me away from the show, but we'll have to wait. And tomorrow morning, I am going to St. Louis, Missouri. Yes, I'm going to St. Louis, suburban St. Louis, where everyone is waiting with bated breath on the grand jury. Ferguson? On the grand jury there in Ferguson. Yes, everyone's waiting. And I happen to have a business trip that will probably coincide with the announcement and the riots, and then I can get some free flat. I'm taking my pickup truck. No, I'm not. I'm not sure there's going to be looting or rioting or any of that, but I'm going to be. Yeah, that funny. Last week there was an interview with a business owner there, who had seen a sign hanging in a window in a Ferguson business, mimicking somewhat the protesters' mantra of hands up, don't shoot. And the sign said, pants up, don't loot. Now that's funny. So that's one witty person in the midst of a potential riot and having your building, your business burned to the ground. They hang up that sign. I guess that's making lemonade out of lemons if there ever was. All right, now. So I'll be in St. Louis. And hopefully I'll be back for the show. I won't be caught up in a whirlwind vortex of violence and rioting and looting. And I'll make it back with some first-hand accounts of the scene, if there is a scene. If there is a scene, I may drive up there and shoot some video. No, I won't. No, I'm not even going near Ferguson. Thank heavens. All right, now, do we have anything else? Yeah. No. Now we're going to go to the bad religion file. Let's get to the news of the week. The past couple weeks, I suppose. In the bad religion file, this is from Yahoo News in Berlin via the Reuters wire. A 1914 watercolor painted by Adolf Hitler has fetched $160,000 at auction. It was auctioned in the German city of Nuremberg this Saturday past. The buyer, according to the Reuters report, was a private person from the Middle East. Okay, I don't think it was a Jew, as I'm going to hazard a guess. Now, I've told you people that the Islamic State and the Iranians and all the Islamic Islamo-fascists, Islamo-Nazis, they are the progeny of Adolf Hitler and his worldview. And one of them apparently has paid $160,000 for a watercolor allegedly painted by Adolf Hitler. The seller, by the way, two unidentified German sisters in their 70s. Okay, let's do the math on this. 1945. Okay, so these girls were just barely born. They were little children at the time that Adolf Hitler committed suicide in the bunker. So their mom and dad must have been Nazi party members or so. Anyway, they auctioned it off, and it's just disgusting, I think. But the vendors say that they will donate around 10% of the proceeds to a charity that helps disabled children. So I guess that makes it all worthwhile. Selling Nazi paraphernalia to Islamists. Well, that's just disgusting. That's all. I just wanted to point that out at the top of the show. And from there, that takes us directly into the war file, as would be appropriate. The Pentagon was duped by an Afghan goat herder, apparently. According to the Washington Times, the Pentagon is under fire for making a ransom payment to an Afghan man earlier this year in order to try to win the release of Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. We're all familiar with Bo Bergdahl now, right? He's the alleged deserter for whom Barry Ho traded five top Al-Qaeda operatives. Well, this ransom payment, now the U.S. government supposedly doesn't pay ransoms. Well, Duncan Hunter and the House of Representatives revealed this payment in a November 5th letter to Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. The payment was made, but the money was stolen by the Afghan goat herder who was claiming to represent the Haqqani terrorist network. All right, so the Pentagon officials have denied that a payment was ever even considered, and they're rather embarrassed because Mr. Hunter's disclosure, according to the Times, undermines a key financial element of Barry Ho's strategy of pressuring foreign governments, corporations, and families not to pay any ransoms. That's been Barry's position. And it's been estimated, by the way, that the Islamic State madmen have made over $20 million this year ransoming hostages. Well, Josh Earnest was asked about it, and he said that Barry continues to believe, as previous presidents, that it's not in the best interest of American citizens to pay ransoms. And he didn't really answer the question as to whether or not a payment was made. He just said, we don't believe it's in the best interest. That's all. John F. Kerry, he addressed the issue of ransoms in a speech last week. He said that ransom payments will not be paid. He said they will not. So he didn't really refer to this one because that already was paid and the goat herder ran off with it. But he says they will not. Both officials, that would be Kerry and Earnest, spoke following the latest beheading of American Peter Kasich. So another American was beheaded, and it's barely a blip on the news anymore, which tells you how savage the world has become. Terrorists behead an American on a video, release it to the world, and it's like, yeah, okay, we've seen that, I guess. You can only work up so much empathy, you know, after a while. It's a war now. But Peter Kasich, American, was beheaded by the Islamic State. And we take note of that, even if the United States government appears to be completely impotent against the Islamic State, or at least significantly impotent to do anything about it. Now, speaking of being duped, the Episcopalians have been duped. Yes, the Episcopalians in Washington, D.C., who operate the pagan temple known as the Washington National Cathedral. Yeah, well, the whole Episcopal Church, pretty much a pagan operation anymore. But they run the National Cathedral, which is one of the biggest cathedrals in North America. Has very impressive buttresses and spires. Very nice stained glass. Haven't heard of a Bible cracked open in the National Cathedral since I think Kennedy's funeral was the last time a Bible was allowed in the building. Well, the Episcopalians have been duped by the Muslims back Friday, November 14th. A Muslim cleric was allowed to lead Muslim prayers right there in the National Cathedral. This was the first time the cathedral has invited Muslims to lead their own prayers right there in what formerly passed as America's Christian headquarters, the Washington National Cathedral. And NBC in Washington reports South African Ambassador Ebrahim Rasool as saying, "This is a dramatic moment in the world and in Muslim-Christian relations." Now, you think if you were being allowed to pray at somebody else's church, that you might mention them first and then yourself. But note that Mr. Rasool says this is a dramatic moment in the world and in Muslim-Christian relations. That's just rude. Or is it more than rude? Maybe there's a hidden message there. Well, speaking of hidden messages, Friday, November 14th, 1914, 100 years before the day that a Muslim was allowed to pray in the Washington National Cathedral, 100 years to the day, the last Muslim caliph declared jihad against the West. And this led to a massive slaughter of Christians throughout the Middle East. And then, of course, the caliphate was utterly decimated because they sided with the Germans in World War I, and the Ottoman Empire was destroyed, and the caliphate fell. Well, 100 years later, guess what? It would appear, at least to any nominal observer, that the caliphate is back. And they've said their first prayer at the Washington National Cathedral. Now, speaking of Islamic fanatic madmen Nazis, let's go to Nairobi, Kenya. Somalis Al-Shabaab attacked a bus in northern Kenya at dawn this Saturday past. And they killed 28 passengers. They killed every passenger who could not recite the Shahada. Are you familiar with the Shahada? Well, as weak as America is right now, you might want to familiarize yourself with the Shahada, just in case you're pulled aside by a Muslim fanatic who wants to shoot you in the back of the head if you cannot recite it. It's some kind of Muslim prayer that I'm going to brush up on. If I get pulled aside, I could at least recite it and not get shot, and then hopefully live to fight another day. 19 men and 9 women were shot at close range after being asked to recite the Shahada by Somali Al-Shabaab pirate terrorist Nazis. That's our enemy. And our government continues from Barry on down to Kerry and on down, through Josh Earnest, filtering all the way down to the bottom of the kid in the mailroom at the White House. They all recite the mantra that this is not a religious war. But Al-Shabaab would disagree. But worry not, America is prepared to deal with any and all enemy forces. The Army, as a matter of fact, is honing our servicemen to make sure that they're prepared for the battles ahead. The Army is moving to discharge a decorated combat pilot who intervened on a dance floor to stop two lesbian officers from showing excessive affection for each other in a drunken state on a dance floor. Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Downey has been convicted administratively of assaulting a soldier trying to film the kissing and the clutching and the grabbing and all the disgusting behavior of the two lesbians. He was also convicted of violating the regulation that ended the ban on homosexuals openly serving in the military. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if any of you have ever been in the military, you know that the military has rules against excessive displays of public affection. You're not allowed to slobber all over your girlfriend at the Marine Corps ball. Okay? A colonel or a captain might come up and tap you on the shoulder and say, "Excuse me, young Marine, check yourself." It's against the rules. You could actually be written up for it. And this is amongst heterosexuals, at least back when I was in the military. Well, two lesbians were on the dance floor, and the one, an Army captain, complained that she and her girlfriend, whom she later married and divorced, were discriminated against by Colonel Downey when he interrupted their drunken, I don't even want to go into it with it. It was on the dance floor. It was in front of everybody. Well, as it stands right now, Al-Shabaab is on the make in Kenya, killing Christians and anyone else that they can get their hands on. The Pentagon's paying ransom to Afghan goat herders. The National Cathedral has allowed the caliphate to be reestablished right there in Washington, D.C. And Colonel Downey stands to be discharged by the United States Army by a forced retirement board as early as next week. Yeah, so that's where we stand, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, you look at the facts on the ground in this great long war of Islamic supremacists against the world. And just based on the facts as I recite them, I mean, who would you pick to win? I'm Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Joined in studio, as always today, by my extremely attractive audio engineer, who has just handed me a clipping from the newspaper that would indicate that indeed the end of the world is upon us. Because, well, apparently there's no shame left. And once there's no shame, anything goes. I mean, it's going to be quite a scene. She just handed me an ad from Walmart in our local newspaper advertising a male personal grooming device. I said a personal grooming device. And whose picture? It's Brett Favre. Brett Favre is the spokesman for a male personal grooming device? Surely this is the end. And then they got a picture of him with his, he's got like the mountain man beard and the shaggy hair. Like the way he looked, well.
I think this is actually current.
Anyway, if Brett Favre can advertise a personal precision hair removal device, well, surely the end is here. Surely there's no hope for Western civilization. Does anybody remember what, maybe nobody remembers what Brett Favre did. Oh. Maybe no. Maybe it doesn't matter. There's just no shame anymore. And that's, well, that's a sad state of affairs. Boy, Walmart's scraping the bottom of the barrel. I bet they got Brett pretty cheap. He hasn't had a lot of endorsement deals lately, so that's unbelievable. All right, now, we've talked about Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Downey, who tried to break up the, it was like a mud wrestling festival on the dance floor there. And he's going to be kicked out of the Army. Decorated combat veteran trying to separate a couple of disgusting lesbians on the dance floor. He gets booted out of the Army just as the war against the Islamo-Nazis moves into round two or three or four, wherever we are. It's certainly not over. Well, that's the sad state of the American military. Focused more on a social sexual experiment than with actually protecting the country, for crying out loud. All right, now let's get to the big news of the week. The news that every single talking head talked about all week, the whole time, was Barack Obama's shuffling of paperwork in the immigration debate, basically legalizing 4 or 5 million illegal aliens. Senator Jeff Sessions, who's been a powerful man in the government, and in the area of the law for over 30 years, Senator Jeff Sessions. He's quoted in USA Today. He wrote a column, as a matter of fact, Senator Jeff Sessions. And he says, quote, "The great task before the nation now is to resist this imperial decree and return control of the nation to its own citizens as our Constitution established." And of course, the talk show talking heads from Limbaugh right on down through all the Limbots, every single one of them, they're just outraged at the shocking behavior of this president that he would dare to shuffle paper and legalize these 5 million illegals, and he's destroyed the republic. He's basically taken over the country as an emperor. He's been called a rogue president by the likes of Pat Buchanan. And there is just general outrage throughout the country. And I'm not saying I'm not outraged. I'm not saying the president has not violated the Constitution. But the Constitution has been left completely violable, you people. I wonder where Jeff Sessions was in 1973. Where was Patrick J. Buchanan in the late 60s and early 70s? When legislatures and courts started to legalize the murder of innocent people, didn't anyone think that might go against the Constitution? Didn't anyone think maybe that was the end of the Constitution? I wonder if anybody even spoke up. I had a discussion on a message board with a Republican who said, "Look, back then we didn't have the internet. We were caught by surprise. We didn't even know. We didn't even realize what was happening." That's what he said. Because he went on and on about how great the World War II generation was. And I said, well, they were great against the Nazis, but what's the deal? Were they out of gas when it came to the legalization of murder here in America via abortion? Maybe they were too tired. You know, I thought about this as I was reading the story about Hitler's watercolor auction. Is that in the long arc of history, when America is looked back upon, perhaps it will be noted that World War II was actually the beginning of the end of America. And we had a few good years after that. But we were so tired, worn out, and war weary after World War II that we've basically been unable to fight the forces of evil effectively since then in any way. Whether it was the communists, whether it was the abortionists, whether it was the homosexuals who are hell-bent on destroying all of us, we haven't been able to work up the stomach to fight the enemies that will destroy the country since World War II. So in the end, while Hitler may have lost the war, the people of Hitler's worldview may have achieved their end by sapping the strength of the last great nation on earth and leaving us leaving us whipped at the end of the day. It's sad to think about. Anyway, where was Jeff Sessions in 1973? Did he ever speak up? I don't remember anyone saying anything. It's as if the Supreme Court, you start with the legislature in Mississippi in 1966. You go to Colorado in 67, California, 67 or 68. These were legislative. Well, let's send it back to the states. Well, if you send it back to the states, you'll find out the states were the ones who started it. Speaking of legalizing abortion, by the way, just in case I've gone off track and lost me. Anyway, now Barry does some paper shuffling about some tomato pickers, and the Republicans are all in shock that they lost the Republic. Oh, the Republic's been lost. The rogue president is taking over. He shredded the Constitution. Don't be shocked that you've lost the Republic. Since World War II, America's democratic political culture has produced a generation of cowards, afraid to take on the battles that could save the nation. Democracy is set up so that only the people with the most avarice and the most self-absorbed, the most nakedly ambitious and greedy, those are the people who will seek office. That's the way democracy is set up. So our system is set up to produce greedy, self-absorbed, nakedly ambitious people to be our leaders. And they're cowards. So a generation of cowards, well, guess what? Read history. Cowards don't get to keep their nation. They don't get to keep their constitution. They don't get to keep their culture. And in the end, they don't even get to keep their stuff, and they don't even get to keep their lives. That's a lesson of history. This generation of cowards proved themselves too cowardly to fight for the very right to life that undergirds the Republic and the Constitution. And in doing so, they lost the country. Cowards don't get to keep their country. Republicans screaming. You people are unbelievable. As if you weren't paying attention. All right. Now, let's move on. The domestic tranquility file. Wichita, Kansas. Wow. Cornell A. McNeil, a 26-year-old man in Wichita, was charged this Friday past with attempted capital murder and rape in an attack in which a woman, well, listen to this, firefighters were called to what was reportedly a grass fire in a park in Wichita, Kansas. This is not in Raqqa, Syria. This is not Mosul in Iraq. This is Wichita, Kansas. Instead of a grass fire, what they found was a woman on fire. She had been raped, beaten, bludgeoned, and set on fire in a park. Cornell McNeil was arrested, charged with attempted capital murder and rape. And now the woman has died. And charges against McNeil will be amended, according to local authorities. He will be charged with capital murder. He's been linked to the attack by forensic evidence. He has a criminal history. Yeah. So when there's no shame, and the nation is led by cowardly lawyers who've decided we have to tolerate bloodshed and murder in our midst, starting with the least among us, the most defenseless, the innocent child in the womb, when that's the state of the country, well, you're going to lose your country. And this woman in Wichita, she lost it all. She lost it all. Just shocking. Now, will Cornell McNeil be put to death for beating, raping, bludgeoning, and setting a woman on fire? He will not. And so, while the death penalty won't be applied to Mr. McNeil, it was certainly applied to the woman in the park in Wichita, and it will be applied to many others. Exponentially, it will be restricted in its use against the guilty, and therefore it will go unchecked in its imposition against the innocent, like this woman in a park in Wichita, Kansas. And it's the cowards and the lawyers who run the country who have put us in an environment in which a park in Wichita, Kansas, something like this could happen in a park in Wichita, Kansas, in the heartland. So let's move from that to the, well, this is usually in the bad religion file, but this week he ends up in the good pope file. The good pope file. We like to give credit where credit is due. And so the Associated Press reports from Vatican City that Pope Francis denounced the right to die movement last Saturday, saying that it's a false sense of compassion to consider euthanasia as an act of dignity, when in fact, says Pope Francis, it's a sin against God and creation. So that gets him into the good pope file this week. Appreciate the efforts of the pope when he's correct, and we like to point that out. What else? From AP is reporting that earlier this month, the Vatican's top bioethics official condemned as reprehensible the assisted suicide of an American woman, Brittany Maynard. Now, most of you didn't see this, but Brittany Maynard, she practically killed herself on CNN. They did a whole work, and I know nobody watches CNN now. Now they're off the dish, and their ratings are 50 people watch their evening newscast, I think. So hardly anyone saw it, but CNN made a big deal of this Brittany Maynard's suicide, and they basically praised her as if she were some modern-day Marie Curie for working up the ability to kill herself before she died of a terminal illness. Well, the Vatican condemned her. The Pope also condemned abortion, in vitro fertilization, or what he called the scientific production of a child, and he condemned embryonic stem cell research, said it is immoral to use human beings as laboratory experiments to presumably save others. He said this is playing with life. Beware, said the Pope, because this is a sin against the Creator, against God, the Creator. Francis urged doctors to take courageous and against the grain decisions to uphold church teaching on the dignity of life, even if it requires resorting to conscientious objection. So, you know, we're pretty hard on the Pope here, with him being a communist and all. But when the Pope says something right, we open up the good Pope file, and this week we say, good Pope. You. Welcome back. I'm Doug McBurney. Now, before I let the Pope go, I'm just reading through the article, and I have to take issue with something the Pope said. Now, we are going to leave this in the good Pope file, but Francis, listen up, buddy. He says, AP reports that Francis is urging doctors to take decisions to uphold church teaching on the dignity of life. Here's the problem with the Pope. He elevates the church above the religion. That's a problem. You know, that's like us saying, well, you've got to try to uphold Denver Bible Church teaching on the dignity of life. He could have left that out and just said they need to uphold the dignity of life. But the Catholics elevate their church above Jesus Christ and above his teachings. And that, well, that's why the Pope ends up in the bad Pope file so often on this show. And oh, no, he ends up in the bad religion file 90% of the time. But we're glad that he stood up against euthanasia and that chick who killed herself on CNN, because that was disgusting. That was the week before they went off Dish. So not only am I off all talk radio now, except sometimes I listen to Michael Savage for a little while. Very short, small doses. But all the other guys, I'm off them completely. Cold turkey. I didn't even get the shakes. Nothing. No DTs. I didn't have to go into rehab. I was fine. But now I'm also off CNN. Except once in a while on the road, I might catch it in a motel. And then I realize that I don't miss CNN anymore at all, either. They've been obsessed with the, what's their obsession now? Is the, this whole Bill Cosby thing. Which I don't even know if I want to address that. Okay, so let's not. Let's move on to the Science Really file. Yes, the Daily Mail in London says, look at this headline. The mystery of the spooky pattern in the universe. Spooky? Is that a scientific term? Spooky? Anyway, they report that eerie observations were made by the Very Large Telescope in Chile. Eerie? Spooky? Are those? They're not scientifically descriptive terms. But when you see statements like spooky or eerie or horrifying or jaw-dropping or mystifying, you can bet what's about to be said contradicts the Big Bang or evolution or the whole old Earth theory in some way. When they start using these type of adjectives like spooky and eerie, it's something that makes them look stupid and their Big Bang look ridiculous. So these eerie observations made by the Very Large Telescope in Chile found alignment between huge interstellar objects called quasars. That's right. They were parallel to one another over distances of billions of light years. The probability that the alignments are due just to chance is less than 1%. And one researcher said, quote, this may be a hint that there is a missing ingredient in our current models of the cosmos. Yeah, that was researcher Dominique Sluis, hence the fake French accent. Dominique says there is perhaps a missing ingredient in our current model of the cosmos. Yes, there is a missing ingredient, Dominique, but don't worry because you'll meet him someday. And hopefully before you die, you'll realize that the missing element was the creator, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jesus Christ himself. He's the missing ingredient in their model of the cosmos. So the reason this caught my attention, I've been driving across country a lot. In fact, I'm getting back up on the road tomorrow, Lord willing, and heading for St. Louis to get me some flat screen TVs. And I'll be listening. I just finished listening to Real Science Friday. Oh, I'm not supposed to say that. Real Science Radio with Bob Enyart and Fred Williams. And if you listen to the whole year, I really highly recommend that you get a year of Real Science Radio. And just listen to the whole year because the patterns that you notice are, well, they're the chances of them being due purely to chance is less than 1%. And so it's so funny, you hear big bangers and old Earth cosmologists are shocked, dismayed. They find things horrifying, disturbing. It's hilarious. And so I saw this spooky, eerie headline, and I knew, well, this must contradict the Big Bang. And if the Big Bang were true, the chances that the supermassive black holes at the centers of these quasars, the chances that they would be aligned, it's just unfathomable that could happen just by chance in a Big Bang explosion. So anyway, there you have that from the Science Really file. And here another story from the Science Really file, as opposed to the Science Really file, which we get a lot of that. But this is the Science Really file. Earth's comfortable temperatures may be thanks, at least in part, to Saturn's good behavior. Saturn has good behavior. Now, these people don't believe in God, yet they're willing to credit a planet with behaving well. It's just strange. Yes, this is the New Scientist. They report that if the ring giant's orbit had been slightly different, Earth's orbit could have been widely elongated like that of a long-period comet, and everyone would die and everything would collapse into nothing. None of us would be here if Saturn was off by just a little bit. Now, Earth's orbit, according to New Scientist, and I have no reason to disagree with them on this, Earth's orbit varies between 147 and 152 million kilometers, or around 2% differential in its relationship to the sun. Between it, we're always about 147 to 152 million miles away from the sun. It only varies about 2%. Well, New Scientist reports that, and these are based on computer models that are declared to have integrity by the Big Bangers and the Old Earthers, because whether you're a creationist or a Big Banger or an Old Earther, mathematics does not change. So the computer models tell us that moving Saturn's orbit just 10% closer would result in the Earth spending part of each year outside the habitable zone, and you know what that means. Everybody dies. The creationists, the Big Bangers, the evolutionists, we all die. If Saturn wobbles just 10% out of its orbit, closer to the sun. Tilting Saturn's orbit, according to the New Scientist, would also stretch out Earth's orbit. A 20-degree tilt would bring the innermost part of the Earth's orbit closer to the sun than Venus. So let's do this in our heads, children. Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars. You know what that means? Everybody dies. Yeah, everybody. Lawrence Krauss dies. Fred Williams dies, Bob Enyart dies, Doug McBurney dies, Mike Tiemann in Las Vegas dies. Everybody dies if Saturn's tilt is changed by 20 degrees. Yes, I was trying to think of other famous evolutionists, but I couldn't think of any off the top of my head. John Stewart dies. Yes, Anderson Cooper dies. Everybody dies. All right. So anyway, I guess we want to give thanks to Saturn for behaving well. New Scientist denies the existence of a creator, but they give compliments to a gas giant out in the universe. Okay, now into the personhood file. The only reason I pulled this story down initially was because I want to put this picture on my website, or at least link to it. Over in England, a 4D ultrasound scan was taken of little baby Leo Craig when he was 31 weeks gestation inside his mother's womb. Well, the 4D image shows little baby Leo smiling. And it was just very compelling to see the picture. I'm going to link to it on the site so you can check it out. And so when I first read this story, I was like, this is awesome. You know, I have my problems with Matt Drudge and his constant promotion of homosexuality as normal. Here's the thing about it. I'm gonna get back to baby Leo Craig in a minute, but let me criticize Matt Drudge, whose site I go to probably 20 times a day. So Matt's got no beef with me, and I think he's a valuable resource, and he has done some very brave things to promote the idea that a baby in the womb is a human person. Well, he's fallen short on several occasions, but at least he has done a few brave things. We appreciate that. But what Matt Drudge has done with the issue of homosexuality is he has taken an issue that, frankly, should not even be discussed in public for fear of that kids might be around and hear stuff that they shouldn't hear. And what Matt Drudge has done is he has made sure that it's a part of the daily conversation in American life. Every day, Americans are discussing things that are so foul and vile and disgusting that they shouldn't even be discussed. He puts them on the top of his page every day. And he puts 1,000 of those up for every one that he puts up like this, with the 4D baby smiling. So, you know, Matt, I just don't appreciate that. Although I do go to your website. I will continue. Now, so let's get back to baby Leo Craig. The baby caught on a 4D ultrasound. When you see the picture, it's just so obvious that this baby is thinking about something and finds it funny. And this is in the womb, or amusing, or delightful. It's just obvious to anyone. And so just a wonderful picture. And then I go and I start reading the story. Miss Craig is the mother. She's 24. She was interviewed by The Telegraph along with her partner, Leighton. I said partner. That's because they're not married. Yeah. Anyway, just a little aside that nobody talks about. They just go on through the story, how wonderful it is. We might even get married after this. Hey. Anyway, nobody cares anymore. And then the couple, can you call them a couple? The fornicating couple, shacking up together. They say that they may be interested in having Leo do some modeling. They've been contacted already by modeling agencies. They say they are interested, but only when Leo's a little older. Anyway, so an unprecedented picture appears in the media, and so we celebrate that. But then when you read the details of the story, it's kind of depressing, just like everything else in life. But by the way, in England, where the 4D ultra scan was taken of baby Leo, abortion, the killing of this child, would be permissible. Abortion is legal through the full term in England, but only in cases of risk to the life of the mother, fetal abnormality, or grave physical or mental injury to the woman. Those are the only circumstances under which. And fortunately, baby Leo is cute, and his mom wanted him, so he won't be killed. But he could have been. It's legal over there to kill. And when you see the picture and to think that it's legal to kill this person. Oh, by the way, England, they have all these rules. Oh, it's got to be a risk of the life of the mother, fetal abnormality, grave physical, mental injury to the woman. It's got to be signed off on by two doctors. It's got to be approved by NHS. How hard do you think it is to get a doctor who's willing to butcher a 30-week-old baby? How hard do you think it is to get him to fudge the paperwork to make sure that you follow all the rules? Anyway. Just letting you people know, once you abandon the personhood of any class of innocent person, it's impossible to regulate their murder. They can be murdered indiscriminately, and they are. Right in your midst, right in your neighborhood, right in England, formerly the heart of the Christian world that civilized practically the entire world. Same thing here in America. And only personhood can ensure that these innocent children are not murdered. And furthermore, that we don't lose our very soul. I mean, we've lost our nation. We've lost our Constitution. Maybe if we would get back to one basic rule about the right to life, maybe we would stand a chance of raising up a generation that has the guts to take it back. It's the Weekly Worldview. Glad to have you aboard. As we're rounding third and headed to home, we go to, let's see, Breitbart for reason number 837 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Now, this happens to be a story about the University of California, which is a public university in the formerly great state of California. And a couple weeks ago, I'm doing the show with Bob Inyard. I pulled out a story about a college. I said, hey, this is reason number 800 and whatever. And he says, well, but Doug, that's a college. Does that really apply? I said, Bob, it's my list. I can say whatever I want.
It's a public university.
Bob's a stickler for details.
I said, I think we're allowed a little bit of poetic license with the...
So I'm calling this reason number 837. I would not be allowed to do this on Bob Inyart Live on KLT here in Denver. AM 670, the 50,000-watt blowtorch for the gospel in Denver, Colorado. I would not be allowed. But here, I have free reign because it's my list and I make up all the rules. Out at UC Riverside, what's happening? Oh, the Students for Life put on a display, and the school sent out an email warning to the students. Yes, they said that the pro-life display could be triggering. And they warned in the email, they sent an email to the entire student body warning them that Students for Life it has a display that may be a trigger event. So is anyone aware of what that means? So let's say you were in a war, right? And it was horrible. You had to kill like 20 people and there was blood everywhere and your friends were getting blown up. It's just awful. Years later, you're walking down the street and something happens and suddenly it triggers a flood of memories and it's just awful. That it's a psychological thing, a triggering event. You have a flashback. So what the University of California at Riverside is acknowledging is that any mention of the child in the womb as a human being triggers horrible memories in women who've killed their children and in men who've killed their children, because men are as involved in abortion as women, by the way, and in some cases even more so. In some cases, men manipulate women and force them to do that. So it's an emotionally triggering event. And so what is the university's solution? They warned, they sent out this email saying, avoid the bell tower on the Watkins Lawn beginning at 11 a.m. on Monday. Yes, there's a display scheduled that has pictures and language pertaining to sexual violence and abortion that could be triggering to individuals. So they sent the trigger warning out to all the post-abortive students there at University of California in Riverside, of which I'm sure there are many, to avoid the... And by the way, this Students for Life display, it didn't feature any pictures of dismembered babies that had been murdered. It featured pictures of babies in the womb and babies in general. And that is very difficult for post-abortive college students, male and female. It could trigger some horrible memories of what they've done. So that's reason number 837. Your children will be lied to. And they will be encouraged to avoid ever coming face to face with their own sin. So that's it, reason number 837. One of the best things that ever happened in my life was a triggering event. Yeah, I had some things happen that really threw up in my face what an evil, lowlife dirtbag I was. And I felt awful for a while. But eventually I came to grips with the fact that, you know what? You're a despicable lowlife. You need someone in your life that can help you be better. And I found that was Jesus Christ. And so I think a triggering event is not necessarily a bad thing. God gave us a conscience so that hopefully at some point it would rub us the wrong way and let us know that we need a Savior and that we need a teacher and that we need someone to teach us how to love and be good, because basically we're selfish and we're bad. At least I am. I don't want to accuse any of you people. I don't want to hurt any of your feelings. We have a triggering event right here on the Worldview. All right. Reason number 838 to get your children out of the government schools in the Chicago Public School District has announced its new sex ed program, and it will now include kindergartners. Yep. Yes. Now, fifth grade students, that's ages 10 and 11, will be taught how to, I can't say what they're going to cover. And this is the fifth grade class. I can't say any of this
because I think it would be a violation of FCC standards to say any of what they're teaching fifth graders in the schools. The school principal there at the Andrew Jackson Language Academy, where this new sex ed program was unveiled, he should be arrested. That's all. They had a seminar there in Chicago to explain to parents the new sex ed curriculum. Only 20 parents showed up to learn what their kids were going to be taught, stuff that I can't say on the air. Let's see. One hapless school board member said, well, the content goes beyond what I feel is age appropriate for fifth grade. See, nobody can just unequivocally say anything anymore, especially if you work for the government or any big bureaucracy. I think even a corporation anymore. You can't say, hey, you shouldn't teach that to a fifth grader. You can't say that because that's too black and white. You're judging, and you're not allowed to do that.
Well, I feel that it's not age appropriate for fifth grade.
Folks, some of this stuff is not age appropriate for a sailor. For Christ, some of this stuff. Anyway, I think he doesn't feel it's appropriate. And then we have another poor, just moronic parent who said, "Oh, she took photos of the graphic illustrations which were going to be shown to her kids," and she says she was shocked. There's more stuff here that I cannot read. Because there's a girl here in the room. I can't read this in front of a girl. School officials quickly moved to distance themselves from the shocking curriculum, claiming that the materials shown were mistakenly downloaded and they were actually intended for parents to see. It's like, okay, so either someone on the board like downloaded this stuff onto their computer, but then why was it presented in the seminar where the 20 parents showed up? I mean, if you accidentally download something pornographic, do you then put it on display? I think they're lying, as a matter of fact. They say, we agree with parents that it's not appropriate for elementary school students. That's because these teachers, most of them, they want to seduce the middle and the high school kids. They don't yet think it's appropriate for elementary school students. But give them time, ladies and gentlemen. Give them time. Now, while the school district now is saying that it was all a big mistake, the same materials can still be found on the website for other Chicago public school elementary school websites. So the material's still up there because this is what they're going to teach your kids. That's reason number 838 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. They will be deflowered, defiled, and mentally raped and sexually abused, if not physically, in the government schools. We move now to Rockville, Maryland, for reason number 836, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Montgomery County Public Schools will remove all religious labels from all school holidays. The calendar will no longer reference specific religious holidays. Why? Because the Muslims are upset. Saqib Ali, the co-chair of Equality for Eid. Are you familiar with Eid? That's like the seventh holiest date on the Muslim calendar, is the festival of Eid. I believe it involves the cutting off of heads. If I'm not familiar with all the details of the holiday, but from what I understand, it involves the chopping off of heads. And they want their holiday to be treated just like Christmas. Or Hanukkah, or all Thanksgiving, right? So the group Equality for Eid, Saqib, he says, they put up a stink about Eid not being an official holiday, and so the school's solution was to eliminate all religious references to all holidays. That's why it's Winter Festival and the Harvest Festival instead of Thanksgiving. Christmas and all that. Anyway, Saqib there at the Equality for Eid organization, he says he's not happy with the board's action. He says, equality is what we are looking for, said Saqib. Okay, Saqib, you know what? Sit down and shut up, because the homos told us that 20 years ago, that all they wanted was equality. Now they're trying to take over the world.
Gee, so are the Muslims. Interesting. Yeah, the Muslims. Well, no, the homos have been trying to. Yeah, they've taken it over on several occasions. They've destroyed empires, for crying out loud. Now, all this action, this doesn't sit well with Zainab Chaudhry of the Council on American Islamic Relations. He's upset. He says they want equality. School board member, hapless, moronic school board member, Michael Durso, he says, as long as the Islamic community's concern for parity wasn't somehow addressed, it comes off as insensitive, and I just don't think we can afford to be seen in that light. Insensitive. I mean, they might cut off our heads. Wait, let's give them what they want. They might cut off our heads. Let's see, I've got another Muslim, another board member says Muslim parents say their children are being treated as second-class citizens. And one hapless Muslim dad sending his kids into the government schools, Abdul Sheikh, he's got two kids in the government schools. He says, it is painful to explain to my American-born kids that the public school gives off for Christmas and Yom Kippur, but not for Eid. How am I supposed to explain that to them? Says Abdul Sheikh. Well, I'll tell you what, Abdul. How about start with explaining the fact that your kids are not in Mecca or some other third world Muslim hellhole. Okay? They're in Maryland, okay? How about that? Why are you not living in the mud with the goats in Saudi Arabia, Saqib? Abdul? How about start with your kids there? Tell them we got away from that third world hellhole. We're in America, for crying out loud. You could start explaining that to your kids. All right, now, two very famous country singers, I've been told, have now come out as flaming, raging, open homosexuals. Ty Herndon and Billy Gilman have come out now as homos. Who? I never heard of either one of these guys, but I gotta tell you, I don't think I have listened to country music since Willie and Waylon broke up. No, like 1975. Yes. I haven't listened to country. I have no idea about country music. As soon as, who was the guy who was big in the 80s? He's about to make his big comeback. I got friends in low places and all that. We can't remember his name. He came out with some homo song in the late 80s or early 90s saying that it was okay for queers to love on each other. And that's when I knew country music was, well, I mean, it's over. So anyway, what you got here is two washed-up country singers whose careers were not exactly on fire anymore. And they've come out now and said that they're homosexual. And now they're going to get a record deal, because if they don't, the homosexual mafia will burn Nashville to the ground. And so Ty Herndon and Billy Gilman, they have not announced their wedding, but they have announced that they are homosexual. And now, I know I'm kind of flip about this, but let's keep in mind, folks, artists have tremendous influence over young minds. More than teachers, and in many cases, more than parents. I know that as a teenage boy, I was paying far more attention to what artists and musicians did than what my parents said, what my teacher said, what the minister at church said. So that's why this matters. That's why this matters so much when these famous people come out and basically call evil good. When you've got your audience doesn't yet fully comprehend the difference between good and evil, and you start teaching them that evil is good, that's where that millstone around the neck in the deepest part of the sea, that's where that verse comes into effect there. So Ty Herndon and Billy Gilman on their way straight to hell with jet rockets. Of course, they both claim to be Christians, just so you know. Finally, the founder of Human Rights Campaign, Terrence Bean, was under arrest. He was taken into custody at his home in Portland, Oregon by the Sex Crimes Unit. Why? He's been indicted for molesting boys. At least one boy so far. Human Rights Campaign is called the most aggressive homosexual advocacy lobby on the planet. And their founder
And their leader is a homosexual child molester. Who'd have ever guessed that? And I think that's probably... Well, I hate to end on such a downer, but there you have it. HRC led by a homo pedophile, allegedly. That's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, where you can catch Bob and Yart live on the internet. American Right to Life, Theology Online, and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studio. We'll be back with you next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.